Now we're coming to
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This morning, as part of our summer tour, thanks to ESB's 1,600 EV chargers across Ireland, giving you the freedom to go further. We're in Dublin Zoo, but of course Dublin Zoo is contained within the Phoenix Park, which is huge. It's the largest enclosed park in all of Europe, and it goes back to its founding as a royal park in 1662. In the centuries that passed, it has seen masses and murders, trenches and turf, allotments and animals, of course, and believe it or not, plans to turn the entire thing into an airport. Now, to look back at some of the wild and wonderful history of the park is John A. McCullen, former Phoenix Park superintendent and author of two volumes of his history of the park, The Landscape History and Management of Phoenix Park. The first one came out in 2009, and just to show what a lengthy and scholarly work it is, it took another 14 years for or 16 years for the other volume to come out. John, you're very welcome. Well, to the
thanks
program.
Very much, Pat.
Now, the Phoenix Park, I mean, you laboured here for 40 years or so.
Yes. It was a dream ticket for me, Pat, both working and then to follow through in the history.
Now, talk to me about what's in the park, because it's more than just the 15 acres and sports grounds and the zoo.
Absolutely. Well, I suppose we'll start now with the official residents. We have the president, of course, President Áras Nuachtarán. You'll be familiar with the ambassador's residence. Now, some people get mixed up and think it's the embassy, but of course, we know that's in Ballsbridge. And then the former undersecretary's lodge, which was became the papal nunciature, and now the park's visitor centre. And then, of course, we had Garda headquarters. There's a big military-influenced magazine fort, the Ordnance Survey Office, which used to be military, now becoming more civilian. Civil defence, indeed, absolutely. And another official residence, the private secretary's residence, where Winston Churchill spent a couple of years, and his brother John was born there, which is not well known even among Churchill scholars. So.
Now, there's so many things happened in the park. I mean, I mentioned murders, and people might think in later years of Malcolm MacArthur.
Yes.
But we won't go to that particular one because that's well rehearsed, I suppose. But going back to the Invincibles.
Yes.
And a very daring and foul deed.
Yeah, absolutely. And no doubt changed the course of Irish history in many ways. I mean, we were moving nicely along negotiations, and then this happened. And it's a huge interest still in it among lots of people. Interestingly, at the time when the Phoenix Park, it was Lord Cavendish, Chief Secretary, of course, the highest office in the land, the second highest office in the land, was just after being sworn in on the day, the 6th of May, 1882, and he was walking up the park with T.H. Burke, Undersecretary, permanent Undersecretary for Ireland, and both of them were killed on the occasion. Now, the significance of that is that, apart from any significance of murders, was that the Chief Secretary was related to the to Queen Victoria. So it struck
it
at the heart.
It was close to home. It was like a Mountbatten-ish
killing. Yeah, it went right to the heart of the British royalty. And Queen Victoria at the time, people are always curious to know about, is there a monument there and so on. Now, there is a small cross there that emanates from nearly that time. It used to have reeds on the road where it happened. But in this particular case, Queen Victoria wanted to erect a cross on the site. Now, the Irish government, inverted commas, didn't really want, they didn't want it to become a place of pilgrimage for the Invincibles. So didn't happen.
Now, how was it done, the killing?
Well, pretty gruesome, Pat. There were surgical knives used on them. They were hiding in a small copse behind them. They came from back and front, and it was all over in a few minutes. Now, there were some witnesses there, which I find very interesting, and probably we think maybe related. There was a guy in a three-wheel bicycle, but people were quite revulsed at the time, and there was a Casey family, which are very interesting, I find, lived in Fishamble Street, Pat Casey, and every 6th of May on the anniversary, his family and now his grandchildren put a little bouquet of flowers on the grave.
to mark the spot.
On the cross, the small cross that's cut into the grass. Yep.
Now, there's quite a military history to the park because you've got the magazine fort, which literally was a magazine for holding weaponry and explosives and so on.
Yes, and that's quite, it figures very prominently, of course. It was to be the launch, if you like, sound, the blowing up of it for the 1916 Rising. And of course, again, it was attacked in 1939 when the arms were stolen from it. And it's just as I suppose I should say that has been restored beautifully. A lot of work has been done on it, so that'll be open to the public fairly soon. But prior to the, which it might be no harm to mention, Pat, before the magazine fort, there was the Citadel Pond, which is over where near the Phoenix Cricket Club. It's that area there. And that was a huge earthen mound fortification. Now, that got levelled in the 1850s during Blessing Was Born Tonight, but sometimes people, you know, feel Citadel Pond magazine are the same, but they're not.
Yeah. By the way, the name the Phoenix Park, when we were growing up there, close to here, we would go up the main road, as we called it, Chesterfield Avenue is its proper name, and you'd reach what we called the Eagle Monument, because a phoenix resembles is a large bird emerging from. Where did the name come from?
Yes, a good question. And I would say to people, Dubliners particularly, didn't know the difference between an eagle and a phoenix. But that's on the, apart from that, the scholars, place name scholars consider that it's come from a word called Fionnishke, which is a stream running down in the south of the country. So,
It was anglicized to Phoenix.
It was exactly. Lord Chesterfield, who is a master of the classics, and he gets the credit for having that erected during his time in 1745-47, put the Phoenix on it. But the real meaning of the Phoenix there is that the landscape at the time was being restored, and he was doing planting and so on. So he had this vision of the Phoenix,
main road, the Chesterfield Avenue, he was a man of vision because he knew he would never live long enough to see the majesty of the trees that we enjoy today.
Absolutely, yes. And it's quite right that, you know, we still have held on to the name Chesterfield, you know, honouring that vision of his, and indeed a lot of other stuff around, a lot of other plantings.
Now, we had obviously masses. We had the Eucharistic Congress.
Yes.
We had the Papal Mass and so on. Yes. And it's interesting, in your book you show, we think of this era as the era of the motor car.
Yes.
You've got parking on the 15 acres, just miles and miles of cars for the Eucharistic Congress.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's always exceptions, Pat. it wouldn't happen now. But it's actually what's fascinating about all those events that you mentioned. I mean, right after our independence, 1922, up to 1932, was 10 years of major, major events. You know, you had the Tolson Games every 4 years, you'd, as you mentioned, the emancipation, centenary Catholic emancipation. You had the motor racing Grand Prix, 29 to 31. So amazing times.
Yeah, and then motor racing up to, certainly through my childhood, I used to get up early in the morning for the practices.
Oh, yes.
And come up to.
Very
now,
good.
Other things that might wake me up in the morning, because the practices of the motor racing certainly did, explosions. We had.
Oh, yes.
Statues blown up.
Yeah, absolutely. During the 1950s, the Troubles, as we call them, the 1950 campaign, you had the Gough Monument blown up, of course, where the roundabout is there and where the Christmas tree now stands for. Yeah.
Now this was an equestrian statue of Lord Gough.
It was quite
a significant piece of work.
Oh, absolutely. Considered one of the best in the world, actually, as an equestrian statue. And we don't have too many in Ireland, even though we're an equestrian country. Beautifully carved, beautifully sculpted, and blown up in the 1950s. One of the ladies, the Manning family that lived in Parkgate Street, told me that the hoof of the horse, which is about 400 metres from the statue, landed on top of the roof. So it was some explosion.
Some bang. And then Lord Carlisle was blown up.
Lord Carlisle.
That was within the People's Park.
That's right. Now, fortunately, neither of the two of them were badly damaged, even though there were big explosions as such, and both of them are now restored in England.
There were bombs, though, that did land in the Phoenix Park
in
World War II.
Yes, in the 6th of May 1944, you had the bomb dropping down at, again, just beside in the Phoenix Cricket Club. And of course, it blew the top off the pump house station where the operator was there. It was a member of his family. Neither of them were injured, but huge devastation as far as the local area. But Phoenix were up and playing their cricket a couple of days later.
Now, in the previous war, the First World War,
yes,
the Phoenix Park was used to prepare men for the trenches.
Absolutely. This is to me, this was a fascinating discovery, if you like, to find out that there was so much activity in preparing the troops for the trenches, Irish troops, English troops, going to war, to France in particular, miles and miles of trenches. They had gas masks, schools, they had Red Cross encampments, so all the learning, and then there was the encampments themselves. They also had bombing grounds, which is amazing. I mean, in the middle of a public park where you had probably 700 or 800 deer, another probably 1,000 cattle, people recreating, the Lord Lieutenant just a short distance away, they put a bombing grounds in. But thankfully, there weren't any. Now, these were practice bombing grounds before they went.
Or they were sent off largely to their deaths, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in the intervening period, what happened? I mean, in the World War II, for example, there was a shortage of fuel.
Yes.
We were an importer of coal and we couldn't get coal, so we had turf. And there was turf in the park.
Yes, absolutely. And so some people ask me, do I remember the turf in the park? Not quite. But it's during the emergency period, of course, with the embargo on coal from England during the Second World War. Of course, we were neutral. But the emergency period was there and it brought its own sort of impact on the park. You had huge stacks of turf on either side of the main road, but in elsewhere around the park, but also acres of cheap coal that was in, well, I presume it was cheap, imported from America at the time. And you had acres of timber logs cut, which I used to think at one stage came from the trees in the park, but no, very little trees were cut in the park. They were actually brought from around the country. So this was to supply fuel for Dubliners mainly.
Did they carve up any of the park for allotments for people?
Yes, indeed. The polo grounds was the victim, I'm afraid. I don't know what we won't go into the politics of why the polo grounds, but it was probably, it actually extended larger than the polo grounds. It came right down to the zoo boundary here and not to Chesterfield Avenue. And there was great debates about that. Now, there was debates about that during the First World War, but we won't go into that. But the Second World War, it was the polo grounds, but President Avalair at the time, or Taoiseach at the time, said he would restore them, and he restored them within a year of the promised date, which was about 1946.
Okay, once the war was over, the food prices had abated.
Yes, yes.
Now, what was this proposal to turn the entire Phoenix Park into an airport?
Yes, well, that was back, and there was kind of a slight, small precedent there for Pat. The British military had the Royal Air Force, and its predecessor had an airstrip along in front of what now is the American Ambassador's residence on the Acre side. So when they were searching around for a Dublin airport, it was one of the proposals that got lobbed in. It was discussed at the Dáil. People were horrified, of course, and a lot of people came out against it. And, of course, they had looked at Baldonnell and Collinstown, and Collinstown was the winner present of an airport.
What is the status of the park? Who owns it? And does it truly belong to the citizens of Dublin?
Yes, I'm going to stick with that, Pat. It belongs to citizens because Dubliners love it in particular, but also Irish people, and it's a wonderful attraction from abroad. Yeah, it was initially a royal park. So all those right parks in England were part of that. We were part of that system, and everything like that transferred over to the government. So it's owned by the...
And to put it in perspective, pretty much all the London parks together would fit into the Phoenix, within the Phoenix Park.
It's yes.
Bigger than the combination of them all.
We have to be absolutely right, but we have to be very careful on this one because Richmond is larger. But Richmond was outside London, but now they've brought it in to usurp our lovely honour of having the largest. And
finally, how would you describe it? Is it in rude good health today?
Yes, absolutely, Pat. It's there's a wonderful management team there that look after it. There's in 1986 it was designated a National Historic Park. Which gives it certainty and hence the interest in the history, you know, to know that we're not sort of doing any damage, that tree planting going on and so on. Yeah, it's a good, but I suppose like all these public areas, I mean, you have to be vigilant and we have great people around the park, both within the OPW, but also working, but also communities around the park that keep a very vigilant eye that has been protected and looked after.
Interesting text here from Maria Nahini. Love listening to the stories about the Phoenix Park. Recently visited the Walled Gardens for the first time. Beautiful. Tried to find out where Cavendish and Burke were murdered, but no marker or plaque. Is that deliberate?
Yeah, well, there is a small cross. The opening, if you go along Chesterfield Avenue, a couple hundred metres down from the Phoenix Column, and where the opening is into Ors Neutron there, opposite that on the bank, there's a small cross, probably about 30 centimetres by 24 wide, but it's there on the left-hand side embankment.
We don't want to invite ne'er-do-wells, though, to pay undue attention.
Well, it's there, and people do search for it and find it. Yeah.
Now, the book that the second volume of which it's as heavy as an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Park: An Illustrated History of Its Landscape and Management, 1890 to 1980, by John A. McCullen. It's available, I presume, in all good bookshops.
Yes,
it should be permanently in print. Yes, as far as I
understand. Oh, thanks, Pat. And Wordwell have it online as well. Yeah.
John, thank you very much.
Very welcome,
for joining
Pat,
us.
And thanks for.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.